Archaeologists in Scotland uncovered two skeletons made from multiple different individuals. Who did this and why? This is the story of the Frankenstein mummies of Claude Helene. Welcome back, everybody, to Audianthropology. I am Ivy Boyd.
And I'm Tayshia Koster.
And Tayshia, I know that you, with this episode, you're a little bit familiar with it. I've shared this topic with you before. And I know that, obviously, with your background and your degree, you know a lot of the historical bits and terminology I'm going to be using in this episode. But I will do my best to explain stuff for anyone listening who might be new to all of this.
Yeah.
So, are we ready to jump on in?
I'm so excited. I did try not to read too much, and I think this is kind of a more recent, like early 2000s.
Yeah.
Fine. So, I mean, I was in school for anthropology from 2006 to 2010. So, I mean, there's a lot of anthropological and archaeological things that I am way behind on. So I am definitely looking forward to this. And I definitely have a huge crush on Scotland. So super excited to hear all about this.
I don't think I've ever heard someone word it as a huge crush on insert country. I'm going to steal that. So let's take a trip then to the Outer Hebrides of Scotland. And also, very first interjection, I do my best to pronounce everything correctly, but also there's so many dialects within Scotland, within just like Britain, the UK in general, that I've heard so many different pronunciations. So I'm just kind of going with what I heard the most. So,
and Scots Gaelic is so hard. Like, I've been trying to learn it, and like, I'm just doing Duolingo, but it's very difficult. So if there's anything that I hear that I might be able to help with, but probably not, because I'm only on, like, you know, 100-day streak.
Hey, that's not bad, though. I think my longest streak on Duolingo was me trying to learn more German, and it was maybe five days most. So, yes, the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, on the island of South Uist, is where archaeologists were on site at a Bronze Age settlement known as Claude Helene. And they've been excavating here as early as the late 1980s. The Bronze Age, for anyone who doesn't know, spans for about 2,000-ish years from the year approximately 3,300 to 1,200 BCE, before the Common Era. And it's called the Bronze Age for the bronze tools that humans had now been developing alongside more complex settlements using other metals and things, like here at the settlement at Claude Helene. So excavations here would reveal the remains of stone walls and flooring belonging to a series of roundhouses, a common type of dwelling for the Bronze Age. And within these roundhouses, they discovered other remnants of human life. So ceramic vessels for storing food and drink, grinding stones, bits of shell. This is cute. As someone who loves jewelry, a lot of these shells had holes like drilled into them, which indicated that they were adorning themselves with these shell necklaces, which is just something really fun to think about. We've always loved our accessories. And there was also things like carved bone, including a bone needle and other bone tools. This is somewhat irrelevant fun fact, but they, so far on Claude Helene, they had found a total of 14 scapula shovels, which had been unearthed throughout the site. So the scapula is the shoulder blade bone being wider and flatter. It makes for a decent shovel, especially from the bones of larger animals such as sheep, which we do know that they farmed, as is evident through other sheep bones. They found sheep cremations, which alludes to possibly something ritualistic with the sheep, but scapula shovels. There's a fun fact everyone can tuck in their pocket and pull out at the next family gathering. So ceramics, grinding stones, shells, animal bones. These are all just a few examples of the different everyday finds from the site, which give us a glimpse into the daily lives of the Bronze Age people who settled here. But in 2001, they also discovered underneath the roundhouse, or the floor of one of the roundhouses, they found two complete adult skeletons, one belonging to a man and one a woman. They weren't the first or only human skeletal remains found here at Claude Helen, but their completeness, or I should specify near completeness, like the teeny tiny bones at the tips of our fingers and toes tend to not last.
Yeah.
The ribs don't all last, but they were basically complete. And so this was a really big deal. We had never had such complete skeletons of Bronze Age individuals. So already this was blowing them out of the water. What an amazing find. Both skeletons were estimated to be around 3,000 years old and had been placed in a position typical for the Bronze Age, known as the crouched position. Today, we tend to refer to it as the fetal position. They were usually bound in a fabric to hold the position, although the fabric has since long deteriorated, but their careful positioning is evidence of its use. And the importance of the discovery of these two near-complete skeletons would only continue to grow when they noticed something really odd about one of them, the one believed to be male, because when looking at the teeth, and in our introductory episode, we talked about how you can tell so much about someone looking at their bones. And they noticed that the top row of teeth were gone. And not just gone, but they had, they can tell, were these lost while they were alive, or did these teeth come out post-death? And it was clear that they came out while they were alive. They was very ground down. But the lower mandible still had all of its teeth. Or I think it might have been missing a tooth or two, but they were like, the top and the lower jaw, this mandible doesn't belong to the rest of this skull. This is someone else's jaw on this, like, complete articulated skeleton. And kind of talking a little bit more about, like, osteology, the study of bones, they can, again, tell things like age based on appearance of teeth. So in this case, a younger person will generally have nicer teeth. A middle-aged person might be missing a tooth or two, have some more wear and grinding. Much older individuals tend to sometimes have lost all of their teeth. And so through this, we could tell, okay, this mandible belonged to someone a lot younger than the rest of this skull from the lack of the teeth. And I just think that's really interesting for one. Shout out to osteologists. Snaps for osteologists.
Definitely.
So the osteologists who noted this, who analyzed these bones and determined that this mandible didn't actually belong to the skeleton, were a little bit suspicious about the other skeleton, that of the presumed to be adult woman. And I'll add here that osteologically sexing bones based on appearance is not a perfect science. They usually look at the shape of the pelvis and the skull, the brow bone and stuff to determine sex, but we're learning more and more and more and more, especially in recent years with the help of DNA analysis, that you cannot rely on that. A fun sidebar and part of the ever-growing Ivy lore on here is that I did 23andMe a while back, and they added a feature where they inputted genetic profiles taken from ancient human remains, such as these ones, and you can actually see if you're super distantly related to a lot of them, which is really cool.
That is super cool.
It's so cool. I know a lot of people worry about what sites like 23andMe and Ancestry might be doing with their DNA and genetic profiles, and I get it, but this feature alone, I was like, I don't sell my data. Like, this is so interesting. Because one of my historical matches for decades since its discovery, it was believed to be male based on the appearance of the pelvis and the skull. And they state all of this within the information on this find, but upon extracting the DNA, they determined, oh, they were actually genetically a female at birth. So that just shows how imperfect sexing skeletons is. And I thought it was cool that I super distantly, like one segment of DNA related to this find that was a perfect example of you cannot always accurately sex based on appearance of the bones. That being said, they try to do this because it helps determine who this person was. It gives us clues as to their occupation, role in society, etc. So there is a reason that we do try to sex bones. Anyways, with Claude Helene, doing something like this can also help us spot something like a composite skeleton or a skeleton made up of the bones of multiple individuals. At this point, they understood that the male was made up of at least two different people with this jaw belonging to someone else. And they're wondering about the female. So when they started looking at her a little bit closely, they also noticed that age-wise, the age of some of the bones didn't seem to match. I can't remember if it's younger or older. I'm not like an osteologist by any means, but I am hoping to learn more as I continue going to school and stuff for this. But you can tell age based on the texture of bones a lot of the time. If they're smoother, if they're more gritty, and they're like, okay, some of these bones seem to be a lot older than others. And with this second skeleton in particular, they also noticed that the pelvis was osteologically female, but the skull appeared to be osteologically male, and DNA testing did confirm this. So sometimes the sexing's accurate, but it also determined that the age range between some of the bones in these two skeletons were anywhere from 50 to 200 years older than other bones. So we aren't talking about composite skeletons made over the series of a few years. This wasn't some random Bronze Age weirdo who was just Frankensteining these together. And I feel weird using the term Frankensteining, but a lot of people kind of use that for these bones, and it does sound kind of fun. So anyways, it was concluded that the male was made up of an estimated three different individuals. Majority of the body belonged to one man. The skull, the majority of like the upper part of the skull and cervical vertebrae belong to a second, and the mandible or lower jaw a third. For the other skeleton, it was determined that the presumably female skeleton, that she was also a composite of at least three individuals. The majority of the skeleton belonging to one, that of a female, the entire skull belonged to a separate man, and the humerus, which is part of the arm, belonged to a third individual. I did find what I think was just more recent testing that said that it was determined that one of the femurs also belonged to a fourth individual. It's all a little bit wishy-washy. Even DNA specimens from such old specimens of bones, it's costly, it's tricky, DNA breaks down over time. But what we do know is that they are each made up of multiple different people, and that's really weird.
That's crazy.
So, and another peculiar detail real quick about this female skeleton is that, and I couldn't find any information and speculation as to why they did this, but at the time of burial, the two upper lateral incisors, which are the teeth on each side of the very two, you know, top frontmost teeth, had been removed post-mortem. The left upper lateral incisor was in her left hand, and the right was in her right hand. And we don't really know why.
And but the skull was not hers.
Yes, the skull belonged to a separate man.
And do you have like the, do you remember, or do you have the age difference between the skull and the hand? So like they obviously already had to have had the skull before they could put them in her hands.
Yeah, I don't have the estimated ages on them. And so okay. I know some of the estimated ages were already pretty broad, even right, just narrowing down like 50 to 200 years is kind of a narrow window in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on why they would have pulled the teeth, those two teeth specifically, and placed them in her hands.
Right. I mean, that's one of the crazy and fun, but also difficult things about like anthropology and archaeology is, you know, everyone can have a different opinion on why someone did something, especially back then. You know, unfortunately, we will never know. Five different people could give you five different valid reasons based on their own experience and research.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, that's the cool thing, but also the hard thing.
It is a lot of guesswork makes it sound like you're not giving enough credit where credit is due, but it is kind of guesswork. It's
educated guesswork.
Yes, there we go. Educated guesswork. So, but even more puzzling than the teeth in the hands was how they managed to do this in the first place, piecing together or Frankensteining these bodies together. Because they were fully articulated, meaning everything was in the right spot, they wouldn't have been skeletonized as they were assembled and eventually buried. They had to have had preserved soft tissues to keep all of the bones and everything in place before they were eventually buried, especially because, again, some of these body parts were 50 to 200 years older than others. And this meant that they were mummified. And mummification, it wasn't, you know, new by any means. People, including the Egyptians, had been mastering the art of mummification. But we didn't know that here in Scotland, Bronze Age people were intentionally mummifying, which made this an even bigger deal than it already was. So there are a few ways that the people of Claude Helen could have mummified their dead. Wind drying, heat drying, tanning and pickling, but for these methods to work, the internal organs have to be removed as they contain most of the bacteria responsible for decomposition and the bacteria and resulting decay. And this is something that I only recently learned can actually leave a visible stain of sorts within our bones, which through various testing we can observe, and we can determine if a body had fully decayed. And if it did, or if it was halted at some point, how much it decayed before potentially reaching full putrefaction, if that makes sense. So for a fully decomposed corpse, the bone will appear darkly saturated. For little to no decomposition, you will see little to no stain on the surface. And for these two skeletons, visible lines of demarcation in the bones showed that little decay had occurred, with some having decayed a little bit more than others, but nonetheless, it was halted. So yes, these remains had been mummified and were being assembled together, which is, I keep saying it, which is just so, so cool and weird. It was initially believed that they chose the method of smoking the bodies to preserve them, which would dry the tissues of moisture and kill bacteria. But other testing pointed towards the remains having been placed temporarily in an acidic environment for a short period of time, and the only acidic environment in this area to do this are the nearby peat bogs. I was like, oh, I'm so excited to have an excuse to bring up bog bodies, which I'm sure we will talk about so much on this podcast. So peat bogs are a specific type of bog found primarily in wetlands of southern Europe. Oops, sorry friends, I am editing this episode, and I definitely meant to say Northern Europe, not Southern. My bad. Anyways, let's get back to the bogs. The acidic water, sphagnum moss, and the spongy peat deposits make for really ideal conditions for mummification, because as peat is, it's composed of decaying minerals and plant matter. And as they decay, they release humic acid or bog acids, and the anaerobic conditions of the grounds and the water, or its lack of oxygen, plus these bog acids are what prevent bacteria in the human body from causing decay. And on top of this, and I know you know all this already, but, you know, for anyone who's like, what is a bog body? you know, bodies also placed in bogs. If it's a watery bog, they will generally sink. A lot of bogs are just more marshy than anything, and they would actually like bury the bodies or pin them down. But this nice spongy peat acts as a nice little cushion, gently cradling the body as the bog acids work their bog magic.
Sounds so lovely.
It's so peaceful.
So cozy.
To be a bog body. The tannins released by decaying plant matter in the water will also stain the bodies, their signature dark brown, sometimes almost black color. Their hair, things like hair and fingernails are also preserved in bogs. Everything is pretty much preserved in bogs, even the organs. And for the hair, the tannins usually, which is the same thing in tea, fun fact, if you're ever walking down a sidewalk and you see the dark stains of leaves on a sidewalk, that's from where the leaves fell on the sidewalk and decayed and broke down a little bit, released tannins and left their little mark. So every time I see leaf patterns on a sidewalk, I'm like, bogs. There we go. But anyways, the skin is usually stained dark from the tannins. The hair is usually stained a reddish color. There's a common misconception that a lot of past people had red hair because that's what we see on mummies and in bog bodies. It's not really true. Red is a pigment that is in most hair colors. It stands the test of time better, but also the tannins and the peat are dyeing it. As for these two bodies found at Claude Helene, they, of course, were eventually buried. And so eventually their tissues, their hair, fingernails, anything that survived has since decayed. And as for, you know, how would these people have even discovered the preservation qualities of bogs? Bronze Age people frequently farmed peat or gathered peat. It can be used for its water retention qualities and mineral contents for farming crops. It can also be dried and burned for fuel for fires. And upon gathering it, they would have occasionally come across past dead bodies which had fallen in, or, you know, people getting trapped and drowning, dead animals which fell into the water. So they would have known something about this is preserving these bodies and making them look almost like they could wake up at any moment. So at some point, they clearly decided to take advantage of this. And I'm sure, again, in the future, we will dive into, pun intended, more bog bodies. I didn't put this in my notes, but I have a book right here. I've showed you this book, Tayshia, Bog Bodies Uncovered, Solving Europe's Ancient Mystery. And I wanted to read just a couple little things from it for anyone listening who, again, is new to the subject of bogs. I found this quote to be really perfectly encompassing bogs. In this book, the author writes, and I quote, "Bogs were and are special places, miasmic and fearsome. They hover in the tween space between land and water. They are both and they are neither. They may look innocent, but can trap the unwary into a horrific and lingering death by slow, inevitable immersion." Ooh.
Beautiful.
We love bogs.
Definitely a liminal space.
Very much a liminal space. I also learned in this book that we used to eat bog bodies, and I'll save that for another episode at some point. Humans like to eat mummies. So, and bog bodies.
Good old Victorian people.
Yep. And there's also a lot of ghosts and folklore to do with bogs, but I'll also save that for a future episode because I've still got like 2 or 3 pages of notes left to read. So let's get back to Claude Helene. Enough sidebars, Ivy. So. There's a much more, you know, ominous glimpse into the reality of bog bodies from that excerpt I just read from this amazing book. But most bog bodies that we find and study today, they were the results of murder, sacrifices, some of which took place in the Iron Age, which was after the Bronze Age. So there's a little added context to the importance of the intentional mummification of these Bronze Age bodies in the British Isles by use of bogs. Getting back to these two composite skeletons, because they had been buried, again, all the soft tissue and stuff decayed, But this also tells us that these mummies were on display to some capacity. They were being held above ground over, again, upwards of 200 years with the age difference between some of these body parts. So they would have been taking care of them. And this all begs the question, why would someone do this? Why mummify these bodies, rearticulate them over time? Maybe something has happened to one of the body parts. Maybe they, you know, the jaw fell off, and so they have replaced it with a different jaw or something, or random arm bones, leg bones. Why do this? Why keep them above ground? This is still debated among anthropologists and archaeologists to this very day. One such archaeologist, Mike Parker Pearson from University College London, he explains, and I think he was one of the archaeologists there for their discovery, I believe. And he explains, and I quote, "The mixing of remains could have been designed to combine different ancestries or families into a single line of descent. He continues, "At the time, land rights would have depended on ancestral claims, so perhaps having ancestors around in the flesh was the prehistoric equivalent of a legal document." So that's a possibility. I love the idea of just keeping dead bodies as legal documents. I might be borrowing that one. Tests done on the enamel from the teeth from, I think, not just these two skeletons, but other remains found on site at Claude Helene did indicate that they were also all native Outer Hebrides. So more evidence of their long time habitation, which can also be seen in these roundhouses themselves where they were found. They rebuilt the walls over time. There's many layers of flooring built over top one another, which is also testament to the importance of longevity and maintaining their occupation in a particular spot, rebuilding and reworking the same homes and settlements over time. And of course, this idea of longevity is also present in these two very unique skeletons, because again, the ages of these body parts, so far apart. They were kept above ground, they were caring for them as other parts were preserved and used to replace existing or perhaps missing ones. Parker Pearson also shares his belief that these mummies may have been used for ancestral worship. Families who kept them around could also have asked them for advice, for help in making, you know, community decisions, for example. Worth mentioning is that there was other signs within some of the roundhouses for other ritualistic happenings. One that's a little bit sad because it has to do with dogs, but this was a very long time ago, so that helps. There were two dogs found buried underneath one of the roundhouses. One had been decapitated and was buried facing the doorway. The other was buried in a doorway. So surely there was a reason for this: spiritual protection, ward off evil from entering the home, something. Right. It's difficult to say for sure. Like you've mentioned, the thing with anthropology is we don't really know. Like, there's no written records for us to look into. We obviously can't ask them because they've been dead for a very long time. So it's up to us to just kind of use our best judgment and make educated guesses as to why they would do this. Were these human remains part of an unknown ritual yet to be unveiled to our modern eyes? Were they meant to prove someone's lineage, to help with their land rights, or give them advice or guidance during difficult times? It could be both. Who knows? And more recently, and this is still ongoing testing as we speak at this very second, and probably the case when this episode comes out, anthropologists and archaeologists in Britain wondered if other Bronze Age skeletons who were also found in the crouched burial position had also been mummified. And so far, at least one other one that they tested showed signs of halted decay through that testing I mentioned earlier, how we can look at bones, indicating that there's at least one other possible intentional mummified body. And now it's time to look into, okay, well, are they also a composite? And these discoveries are quite literally rewriting what we thought we knew about Bronze Age people in Britain and their spiritual beliefs and their death and funeral practices. The burial, the eventual burial of these two composite mummies turned skeletons likely occurred during a time when there was new religious or spiritual beliefs. Their burial is probably symbolic of the end of the old ways, worshiping ancestors as they bring in the new. So instead of turning towards ancestors for help, maybe at the time that they decided to finally bury them, they were now turning towards other higher powers. Who knows? But the fact that they were so carefully wrapped and positioned and buried still shows a deep love and respect for their ancestors, which is really beautiful.
Yeah, and definitely. You can, like, obviously these bodies were very important to these people to put this much time and effort and care into keeping them for so long.
Yeah, and then the care put into wrapping them and burying them, not just anywhere, but like underneath the floors in one of their own homes, presumably the people related to them who had been caring for them for so much time, for generations and generations. So I do have an extra little fun facts to end with. Some context for our listeners is that one of my big passions, if you've listened to episode one, is that you know that I like things dark, creepy, ghost stories, the paranormal, the works. And I also love cemeteries. Why do I bring this up? Well, you can imagine how pleasantly surprised I was to find out during a bout of curiosity for where the name Claude Helene came from. I didn't know that the word Claude means graveyard or kirkyard, cemetery, that is what it translates to, and that this settlement / archaeological site is in fact named after the nearby modern cemetery, Claude Helene.
Cool.
Another quick fun fact is that Helene is believed to have come from a local priest whose last name was Hall, but, ooh, okay, time for some old-timey tea and drama on the creation of this cemetery that I have to include. So, rumor had it that the previously used burial grounds for this area had been located at a local medieval church, and it was for St. Peter. And sometime in the 18th century, it was moved to Helene and, you know, dubbed the Claude Helene Cemetery, by the insistence of a priest, possibly the priest Helene is named after, because the mourners at St. Peter's were partaking in too much late night drinking.
Uh-oh. So
too many drunk people late at night. So apparently that is why the cemetery was created, is too many drunkards at the old medieval church. They're like, we need to relocate somewhere where we can keep a better eye on these mourners who are, you know, mourning in their own unique way. And another note to end on, while looking into the history of the name Claude Helene, learning that it's named after the local cemetery, is that the cemetery, Claude Helene, which of course is still existing, they are accepting of donations, which they rely on for the general upkeep for the cemetery grounds and to help continue digitizing burial records so living relatives can locate their loved ones here, which I just think is really cool as someone interested in cemeteries. Most of them rely on donations. So I wanted to include that if anyone wants to donate to the Claude Helene Cemetery that this settlement is named after. There will also be a link down below. I donated £10, which ended up being about $13, which made me happy because I love the number 13. I love my unlucky 13. So that is the composite skeletons at Claude Helene and the ongoing testing and the rewriting of Bronze Age peoples that is still going on as we learn that more of these bodies were probably also mummies that they were doing something with. So yeah. Tayshia, any thoughts? What did you think?
Yeah, that's super crazy. I mean, I definitely like had some questions come up. I mean, obviously not like for you because you don't know and we don't know anyway, but yeah, I was curious, like, were these specifically these two, like, was it just they've just been the only two we found so far? Did each home have their own, like, ancestral kind of mummy that they were keeping and caring for? Were these, like, specifically the, like, clan leaders or something? Or, like, ancestral clan leaders that they were keeping mm-hmm. and caring for? But yeah, that's incredibly interesting and mind-boggling.
Yeah, imagine being the person not only uncovering these skeletons, which for a lot of archaeologists, that's kind of the dream is, you know, you're finding pottery sherds and other little bits and bobs, animal bones from the animals they were eating. And then to come across a human skeleton, a human burial is like, ooh, now here we go, because you can tell so much about a civilization based on how they bury their dead. Is there going to be burial goods? And then, yeah, not only that, but to be the person who first clocked, like, oh, wait a second. Like, that jaw doesn't belong to that skull, and this bone looks a lot older than that bone. Like, what is this Frankenstein-looking skeleton sitting here? So, super fun, super interesting. I'm excited to talk more about bogs and bog folklore at some point.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to hear more about that.
Yeah, and, you know, eating bog bodies and stuff, which I say is like we're both drinking tea right now. So it is very bog core, I suppose. I had a blast with this episode. All of my sources I used in my research will all be linked below. Also, books that I've mentioned. There's a couple of YouTube videos that came out just in the last couple of months on Claude Helen because of these ongoing testing on other skeletons that might have also been mummified. So check those out. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, leave a review, bestow, ideally, 5 stars upon us, please. And thank you for absorbing all of this, Tayshia.
Yes,
I hope that
you.
It was worth your time.
Yes, absolutely. I hope everybody becomes their own bog bodies of listening to our information on this. Preserve yourself in our...
Oh my god, preserve yourself in our beautiful voices.
Just yes.
Cradle yourself in the spongy peat, relax, and enjoy the stories. And join us next time. Next time, Tayshia is going to be taking over and sharing something with me that I don't think I will have very much knowledge on, so I'm doing my best. You told me what it is already, or what it
yes,
might be.
Yes, I was going to say, I don't know if I want to, like, give what it is exactly, because I don't want to, like, I don't want to have anyone cheat and spoil it for themselves.
no spoilers.
But, another interesting find that, actually, it's kind of similar. Another body find that ended up being not what they expected.
Okay, so it sounds similar, but I know it's actually quite different. So
yes.
I am very excited. And everybody, join us next time on Odd Anthropology. Bye.
Bye.
Congratulations, you've made it to the very end of the episode. Enjoy some of this episode's bloopers as your reward.
Not like that your bones become your part of your skull, but like it definitely all solidifies more that it's not, yeah, like, go ahead and just cut all that out.
Okay. So
I do remember that, like, learning about that in school where the upper jaw would be, yep, just keep cutting it out. Don't let me say anything.
No more. Just I can nope. Sit here and hear and like mute you.
Tap out.
Yeah. Cut the cameras.
Tayshia up.
you think you're like responding to me, but the whole time you're just muted. No. so